mir blüht ein kleines Blümelein und das heißt Erika. Heißt von 100.000 kleinen Bienelein, Irrtumsmerika. Denn die Erde ist voller Süßigkeit, zarter Duft entströmt dem Blütenkleid. Auf der Eide blüht ein kleines Blümelein und das heißt Erika. In der Heimat wohnt ein blondes Mägdelein und das heißt Erika. Dieses Mädel ist mein treues Schätzelein und mein Glück, Erika. Wenn das eine Krokodila blüht, singe ich zum Gruß dir dieses Lied. Auf der Heide blüht ein kleines Blümelein und das heißt Erika. In mein Kämmerlein blüht auch ein Blümelein und das heißt Erika. Schon beim Morgengrauen, so wie beim Dämmerschein, schaut's mich an, Erika. Und dann ist es mir, als spreche ich's laut, denkst du noch an deine kleine Braut. In der Heimat weint um dich ein Mägdelein und das heißt Erika. Auf der Heide blüht ein kleines Blümelein und das heißt Erika. Denn ihr Herz ist voller Süßigkeit, zart Duft entströmt den Blütenkleid. Auf der Heide blüht ein kleines Blümelein und das heißt Erika. Erika.
We'll be right back. All right, right on cue. I timed that one pretty freaking well for flying by the seat of my pants as usual on the music. I've given up trying to do curated pre-show playlists. It's hard. My poor salty little brain can't handle it. We got a good group in so far over here. Well, actually, we'll flip it around this time. We'll start with a FTJ this time. So far on FTJ, we have Shameless Wise Ass, Thomas E. Dwyer. Good to see you, sir. And of course, everybody's favorite foggy friend, Kermie, unobtrusive, sneaking in the background, and Arian Eagle, the Commandant. And then over here on 88 Streams, we got Arian Eagle, John Wayne SS, Froggy Friend Kermie, and Sergeant Snackles. So, and anybody that is listening along on Crewbot, I'm giving you a no slash. You can't see it, but I'm giving it. So, all righty. So, farming friends again this week. We're going over a pretty shitty topic, if you'll pardon the pun. We're going over compost, guys. Although there was surprisingly little fecal matter involved. Like, when I was researching it, I was kind of pleasantly surprised until I got to the part about, like, worm bins. And then I was grossed down again. Salty doesn't do slimy things. No, I don't. So, of course, we have the amazing Teresa Walsh hanging with us tonight. How are you doing today, Tessa? Oh, you're muted, honey.
I am hanging in there. How are you?
I woke up white, so
Yeah, that's a good thing.
everything
I
else is pretty much surmountable at this point.
don't
Woke up
know
white
how
and on the right side of the dirt, so
Yeah.
good thing. So
That's important.
it is important. So yeah, we're going over composting. I'm trying to figure out if I can share my notes on my screen here. I didn't think this through very, very well. That's the wrong button. Because I need to be able to read them, so it's easier if I can read them on the screen. Let's see, window. I can.
Don't know what I did here.
Woohoo!
No, look.
There they is. Yeah, I'm sorry, that first bit I put in Telegram, I didn't realize what a garbled mess it was. And I switched my operating system on my laptop to a better one overall, but I don't know if it's something to do with encryption or what, but it will not connect to the Wi-Fi at work. So now
Oh.
my work time at work is not accessible. So it's a balancing act. So, alrighty.
I
Go
have this
ahead.
problem with a with my mail address that I've had for 20 years.
Uh-oh.
It for some reason now on both my 'cause it, my laptop and my iPhone are connected. And I've
Okay.
always been able to access my Mac mail for 20 years on my phone or my laptop. Now all of a sudden I can't, if I'm not on Wi-Fi, I can't see my Mac mail. I'm like, what? How did that happen? It's just stupendifies me. I don't get it. But
Yeah.
so now I got to go to Gmail anyway.
Oh, jeez. Have you looked into Proton at all?
It seems very confusing to me. I'm going to have to put my mind to it. It's not
Proton.
it. Do you have Proton mail? I
I
know.
have I have Proton Mail, and I've been kind of learning all the others. It's kind of a suite. It seems to operate in a similar fashion to Gmail. So I don't know how that compares to the Mac, but it seems that it's got a drive. It's got a free VPN. So it's one that's often recommended for switching off of the Super Jew run bullshit. So I think I'm going to go over that in one of our upcoming sort of tech talks.
Tech talks, yeah.
Yeah, really, really focus on like people that are wanting to get off Google and Gmail in particular. You know, Proton is a really good switchover that's going to function in a similar manner. So
Cool.
we will have to go over that. But composting, I've never actually done composting, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's interesting.
My big concern was, is it going to stink? Like, I technically live in city limits, so I got to be careful.
Yeah, you have to have enough brown material so it doesn't. Yeah, go ahead. Go. You have a great setup here with your.
Let me, whoops, I gotta scroll. So, right, topic one, composting. So why is composting important? So from what I've researched, you can turn all your kitchen and yard waste into free nutrient-rich soil amendment. It improves the soil structure, retains moisture, feeds microbes, reduces fertilizer needs, and cuts on landfill waste, which, depending on your setup for like trash removal, could lower some of your monthly bills. Like, yeah. I know a lot of places you have to pay extra to have lawn cuttings and yard waste removed. You have to get those special bags. So if you're composting, it seems like it could cut out a lot of that potential cost as well. Plus, you know, we're doing the Hail Victory garden. So this is a perfect way to get some really good compost to help fertilize your vegetable garden.
We have friends in where we came from and up in New York that it has now been made, they're in one of the five boroughs of New York, and it has now been made mandatory that everybody has to compost.
Oh, that's now, interesting.
And, yeah, really interesting. And what I find interesting is before that, so now that like they can keep their compost, but before, if you wanted the city to take away your cuttings and then you wanted to go buy compost, like they take your stuff for free and they make this compost and it's not even that good, and then you got to buy it back. It's like... Better do it in your own yard, you know?
Yeah, it's all a grift. That's actually interesting because a lot of places, it's like they really for a long time have been cracking down on home gardens and, you know, it's not just HOA stuff. I mean, they'll get really shitty about that too. But, you know, you're not allowed to – you have to have like a lawn. The city ordinances will crack down on a lot of this stuff. So it's interesting that we're seeing them swing the other way. I'm not sure what the motive is for that. But maybe they just – you know, it was too costly for them to go pick the stuff up and convert it into compost.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's definitely – it's interesting. I'm sure there's a lot of different methods you can utilize for composting. I picked just some of the big three that I noticed more or less. Starting with the most common, like backyard bin or pile composting. And you'll see a million reels and TikTok videos of the sort of lifestyle influencer type chicks. They're like, I'm a suburban mom. Look, I'm taking these free pallets. First of all, where are y'all getting free pallets? I can never find.
Uncle Steve used to get them up on Long Island.
It's like anytime I've seen pallets, it's like they're like practically guarded with, you know, weaponry. Our pallets. I mean, I get it. I've worked with warehouses. I understand they're not cheap for the warehouses either, but it just kind of is like they make it seem like it's so simple to find, and they're not.
No.
But yeah, you can realistically, you don't need the pallets, people.
You know where I found free pallets, but they're not great. But they were the ones they didn't want was Tractor Supply. You used to go in their back lot, and they would just they would have the good pallets over there and over here by the curb. Where I'm like, you guys using those? They're like, no, you can have those. Those are the.
My whole house with pallets.
He used to Uncle Steve said he used to heat his whole house with pallets.
Nice.
On Long Island. Yeah, but okay. Yeah, they give you the ones they don't want. Like, you know.
I mean, if you're just going to be kind of reconstructing them or, you know, burning them, then hey.
Yeah.
Y'all heard it from Sista Tess. Check out Tractor Supply. It's a good source.
There's a Sherman Williams that they just had pallets sitting out in the back 40 of their parking lot. I'm like, are you guys using those? Like, no, take them.
I'll have to look into that.
They kept the good ones under lock and key. They put outside, you know, just.
The busted up ones, and yeah.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
I learned so much on these shows. So yeah, now we know where we can get pallets. That being said, you know, you don't need one. You can just start a pile, basically.
You can take some chicken wire.
Really?
And make it into a circle, but go ahead.
With the bin or pile composting, there was sort of two ways you could do that, hot or cold, which I didn't realize. I guess hot composting is faster. It's a fast managed process that can take approximately 3 to 6 weeks or longer, kind of depends, but it does require a specific 30-to-1 carbon to nitrogen ratio, as well as turning it frequently to reach specifically between 130 and 160 degrees Fahrenheit or 54 to 76 Celsius. Ha, I actually looked up the Celsius this time for any Canadian waffen out there.
Nice.
And you want to hit that temp to, I guess, kill not just the weeds, which that made sense to me, but like, I didn't even think about pathogens.
Yeah.
And remembering, what was it last month where we were going over seedlings, or maybe it was one before that, where it was like they kept saying about making sure you have sterilized pots and tools and everything. So that does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess this ratio is very important for creating a sweet spot that balances the temperature and nutritional needs of the microorganisms that drive the decomposition. So as ever, carbs, in this case carbon instead of carbohydrates, acts as the primary energy source, while the nitrogen provides the building blocks for protein synthesis and microbial reproduction. The compost should be turned – I mean, what I was reading said every 2 to 3 days. I don't know what your experience is with that, Tessa.
So I – coincidentally, I started a class last year for biocomplete compost. Okay. She actually just died, the pioneer of this method, Dr. Lane Ingham. But anyway, yeah, she's saying it could be 24 hours. Like, you want the center temperature to be 12 hours, and then you turn it, and there's a whole way to turn it in three ways. It's really interesting.
Okay.
But yeah, you go ahead. Yeah, it's important to kill the weeds.
Right.
But if it's too hot, too long, it'll kill the good organisms.
Gotcha.
Because you want the biology, she used to call it the biology, which is your good nematodes, your worms, your good organisms that feed on the bad fungi. Go ahead.
The only other thing it said was just anytime the temperature drops below that 130 Fahrenheit or 54 Celsius, you want to turn it.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, going by that metric, you would want to kind of just keep an eye on the temperature, maybe grab a cheap thermometer to kind of stick in the pile.
I have one.
Do you?
I'll show you what I have. I haven't used it yet.
She recommends like 3 feet.
Look at this bad boy.
Oh, nice.
Whee!
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm guessing you can get that at anywhere from like Tractor Supply, Rural King, probably even Home Depot.
I got it on Amazon.
Okay, there you go.
Like three, it's supposed to be 3 feet.
Okay.
But we're making certain kind of piles with her method.
Right.
You know,
okay.
Like these inside the chicken.
Oh, in the chicken wire.
Yeah, you make a cage.
That's an interesting. I'll have to look up. What did you say her name was?
Dr. Elaine Ingham.
Elaine Ingham. Okay.
Yeah. Her school is the Soil Food Web. Soil Food Web. And I think she talks about the poop loop. The poop loop.
Nice. Yeah, I'm gonna look into that, because I like the idea of the chicken wire, because then you can kind of customize to your space needs a little better, in some ways.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, very
I learn cool. things. So I tried to put together kind of a step by step for dummies, for newbies.
Me too.
So apparently, the first thing, you want to choose a shady, well drained spot near the garden and a water source, which makes sense. Who wants to be schlepping, you know, buckets of water? So, or, you know, either near a hose or just have a really, really long hose. Like, you can get ridiculously long garden hoses. But it was, it's funny. I never thought like shade would matter.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, is that got to do with it not wanting it to heat up too much under direct sunlight?
Well, it depends on, like, here in the summer, it's hot as Satan's bathwater out here, you know, so, you know, but I think it more has to do with I don't really know. That's a great question.
Oh, you know what? Maybe not drying out too quickly.
Maybe. Yeah. That, I mean, mine is in the shade. That's where that's where Uncle Steve and I put ours. It's in the shade.
Okay.
Anyway. Go ahead.
So yeah, so you pick your spot, you figure out your setup, whether you're using pallets, chicken wire, whatever, and then you want to start with 4 to 6 inches of browns as a base. So twigs, wood chips for air. And I do have a list we'll get into in a little bit of just like the key things for your browns, your greens, etc. And then you're going to layer your greens and your browns, and you want to do about one part greens to 2 to 3 part browns.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and you've mentioned this before, like lasagna.
Yeah.
Even if you've never made lasagna, guys, I'm sure you've all eaten lasagna. And if you haven't, what the hell is wrong with you? It's delicious. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just think of it like lasagna and kind of layer it. And you want to kind of chop big pieces up. Apparently that's important. You don't want it, especially if you're trying to do this more rapidly, you don't want to have real big chunks of stuff in there because it takes longer for that to break down then.
Absolutely.
Apparently you want to keep it moist, about like a wrung out sponge where it's damp to the touch, but not wet. And that seemed to be very important.
Yes. So you don't want to drown them. You don't want to drown them. The good microorganisms. Yep.
And here I am, the girl that constantly overwaters and drowns plants. Whoops. I was funny earlier. You're like, nobody can kill mint. I'm like, hi, my name's Salty. But
I recently killed a pot of mint because I left it in the garage too long.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I heard a theory once, or I read a theory, that plants and trees and bushes and stuff can act as like a buffer. Like if you have a lot of people throwing negative energy, negative magic, whatever at you, hexes, curses, this is kind of more in like a magical context, that, you know, your plants will actually absorb that. You know, and kind of like take the shot for you. And I'm like, this really makes me look back at my past of like having plants die on me all the time and go, who hates me? Like,
right.
It was just kind of funny. It made sense that all the witches and fairy tales lived in the woods, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Filthy in FTJ chat says, don't use limbs and twigs as browns. Takes forever to break down. Use leaves or rotten wood.
You could also get free wood chips.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Chip drop.
Yeah, I'm guessing you kind of want to avoid anything. What's the phrase? Where they treat it with arsenic, so you can like use it outdoors.
Yeah. Pressure treated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you want to really, really avoid that. I know I made the mistake of trying to burn some pressure treated one time.
Oh, no.
One time.
Yeah.
So you keep it moist like a sponge, and then you're going to turn it, again, 2 to 3 days, you know, maximum, but probably more frequently than that. You're going to want to check it at least every day. Get yourself a big, badass
spade.
You can get little pitchforks, whatever works better for you. And get one of those awesome thermometers like Tess showed. It's freaking awesome. I'm going to have to find one now. So apparently if it gets to about 140 Fahrenheit, 60 Celsius in the center or higher, you can turn it to introduce oxygen and prevent it from getting too hot. So realistically, you don't want it to get above 170 Fahrenheit or 76 Celsius. Right. Because again, that's going to start killing off the good microorganisms.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to stop turning when the temperature no longer increases after turning. So I guess when you turn it, you'll see it kind of spike up, and when it stops doing that, you know, it's about ready to go to the next stage.
Got it.
So this apparently signals that the pile has entered the curing stage, and this threw me. I'm like, I never thought of having to cure compost.
Well, yeah, you want it to be good stuff.
Yeah.
Black gold.
You do apparently want to stop adding fresh waste about 4 weeks prior to harvest. So I'm guessing around the time you, maybe a little before you stop turning, you're going to want to you're going to want to stop adding fresh stuff because it's just going to stop breaking down at that point. And then you'll have like chunks of stuff in there and that's no good.
Right.
And then you want to go, you can either move the curing bin or allow it to mature in place. So again, if you're doing like an actual bin, you can move it. Otherwise, just kind of let the pile sit and ensure that it remains, again, slightly moist, but not soggy. So you're not trying to dry it at this point.
Right.
Pretty much, it seems like if compost dries out, it becomes less useful. Can you, like, rehydrate it if it does dry out once it hits the curing stage? Or is it just kind of dead at that point?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I've seen people plant the tree right in the pile. Like, when they talk about leaving, maturing it in place, they plant the tree right in there.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, that's why it's good to start, like, if you're building new garden beds, start your compost pile right
like,
if you're not starting it in the bed, because, or you're not, or say you already have an established bed, and then you want to, because you got to replenish it, because everything sinks, you know, so you gotta replenish it before the next growing season, so you start the compost right there.
Yeah.
Next to that bed, you know, things.
Yeah.
Like, so you're not schlepping it or.
Yeah. That makes sense. Because I know I've seen like diagrams for, what do they call them? The keyhole gardens.
Yeah.
You basically have the compost. It's kind of rounded with like a little key slot and that you can kind of step into. And it's got like the chicken wire, and you do the compost right in the center, and then you water the compost spot, and it takes all those nutrients out to the rest of the bed.
Yes. I want one of those. That's on my wish list.
I would love one of those. We're going to actually get going with the Hügel culture, where you do the mounded hill.
Nice.
That's basically like a version of starting a compost pile in a way, I guess, just kind of covered with soil. Let's see. And then, you do want to dry, at least to some extent, and screen the compost to remove large debris back to the hot pile, or put into the next spot you're going to be doing a hot pile on. So finished compost should be dark and have an earthy odor. It is safe for direct use on plants. Probably safer than most of the stuff you can buy. Like, you could spring for the organic super fancy pants stuff, I guess, but you know, when you can make your own, why splash out the extra money, right?
Right. I'm going to have to take this call.
Oh, nope. Go right ahead. I'll just keep babbling my way on.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So, examples of browns, greens, and scraps. The scraps are kind of included in, because like the big part of this is taking your kitchen scraps. Now, I'm also, we talked about this either last month or the month before, where you can sometimes take those scraps and use them to start a whole new plant. It doesn't work with all scraps, but some you can. But, you know, the ones that you're not doing that with can typically be put into your compost. Now, not everything. You're not going to want to put meat in. For mostly, I think, to not draw critters, like I think it can be done, but it gets more complicated. And again, I was trying to keep these to the very, very simple, simple setups for everyone. So browns, again, that's your carbon-rich content, and dried leaves, paper, and cardboard, but it's got to be non-glossy, and it works better if you shred it up first. Again, just kind of break it down and then chuck it in. You can do woody items, so wood chips, sawdust, small twigs. I wouldn't do like necessarily green wood, like fresh wood that was just taken down. Like Filthy said, you want stuff that's been kind of down for a while, if not like outright starting to already rot, then at least dry down. Dry garden waste, so straw, hay, dried stalks, so like garden stalks, plant stalks, or like corn stalks. Toilet paper and paper towel rolls can be chucked in there. Egg cartons, obviously not the styrofoam ones. You would want to do the paper ones. But hey, you know, if you're going to get into more of the livestock angle of doing gardening / single home farmsteading type thing, then save those egg cartons if you get chickens, because you might need them. And nut shells can be chucked in there. So like, I'm sure not all of us are buying giant bags of peanuts or what have you, but a lot of times you'll have trees around you where they're dropping those big old green, what's it? What are they? they're kind of walnut. And they get all over your yard and they're gross, and you can chuck them right in there. And then your greens, that's where you get your nitrogen. So this is kitchen scraps, fruit, veggie, coffee grounds, tea bags. You just got to make sure you take the staple out. I mean, I guess a staple here or there wouldn't really matter, but, you know, just to be safe, pull staples out. Crushed eggshell and stale bread can go in there. Although I did read somewhere, and I think I have it somewhere else, you kind of want to avoid citrus. Yard waste, so grass clippings, faded flowers, plant trimmings. It's a really good way when you're doing, obviously you're not going to throw weeds in there necessarily I guess you could some weeds. It would depend on the weed. I guess some are harder to kill than others. I know we've got this form of bamboo that grows all through the back that you cannot kill this shit. Still not quite sure what it is and where it came from. Possibly the seventh level of hell. You can put manure in here for nitrogen. Now, again, if you're in city limits, you kind of want to be careful with this because you don't want to be stinking things up. But as long as you're making sure you have the appropriate ratio and, you know, if it starts to smell a little bit, throw some more browns in there and that will apparently kind of help cut that issue. So aged livestock manure, cow, horse, chicken, and rabbit. And this adding that is excellent for speeding up the process. Tea bags aren't made of plastic. Yeah, you do have to be careful with the tea bags. I mean, I'm a big proponent of if you like tea that much, just get loose leaf and get yourself a little tea strainer, a little tea ball. It's the best way to have tea anyway. What about waffles? Do they compost? Yes, they do. Waffles will compost, and if they don't, well, we'll just find a pig farm. Really, Aryan Eagle? Really? Not even going to read that one out loud. All right, so equipment for this can be as fancy or as basic as you want it to be. So kitchen pail or countertop bin for your scrap, basically something to collect your kitchen scraps in, you know, and you're going to be taking this out, like maybe depending on the size of your family and how much scraps you produce, you know, it can be a real small, you could use a Tupperware container, you know, it's just going to depend again on how much kitchen scrap waste you produce. You're going to need an outdoor bin, or you know, you can use plastic, wooden, a tumbler. You can do it yourself with wire, wood, cinder blocks, pallets. The biggest thing with it is the size. So a 3 foot by 3 foot by 3 foot is the minimum, absolute minimum requirements. You actually, for optimal results, you kind of want to bump that up to about 4 4 4. Hey, Bear Waffen, good to see you. Waffles don't rot, they wither. Oh my God. So yeah, 3 by 3 by 3 is the absolute minimum from the research I did. Now, that could be completely wrong. Keep in mind that I'm researching the interwebs and you get a lot of conflicting information from all the different articles and sources you read. But this was one thing that kind of stuck out as consistent throughout all those sources. A pitchfork or shovel. Honestly, I'd recommend getting one of each because I imagine both would be useful at different stages. The pitchfork is going to come in handy probably earlier, and then later, once it's real nice and broken down and crumbly, the shovel might be easier. Don't compost goy slop. You'll pass the poisons. Right. Yeah. We're trying to get away from the goy slop, right? So that's a good point. You know, don't put too much goy slop food in it. So you want to kind of stay away from the super processed stuff. And optional is a thermometer, but, you know, it seems like the temperature window is very important. So I would recommend, like, if you're going to splash down a little bit on any piece of equipment, that's probably the one to focus on and make sure you get one that, you know, is highly rated and highly recommended for accuracy. So... common mistakes. I had to put this in here because you know I'm going to make these. You know that's going to happen. It's either too wet or too dry. I do that to plants all the time. And you get the wrong ratio of browns to the greens. Adding meat or dairy, you don't want to do that. It's like I said, it could stink. It can draw critters. And that can become a problem. Wrong size. Again, you know, you've got to make sure it's the right size. So the minimum 3 by 3 by 3. Wrong size items to put in it. So large branches, etc., can disrupt the process. and adding too much at once. So you want to feed it a little bit at a time. And if you're kind of comparing it to dietary things, you know, think of it as grazing. You know, when people are on the, oh, I'm on a grazing diet, you know, little nibbles throughout the day or week or what have you. And leaving the pile open. Okay, so cover apparently is important. So if you're doing kind of more of an actual pile and you don't have like an enclosed bin, then I recommend a cheap tarp. You can get cheap tarps lots of different places. Even if you have to get it on, you know, Amazon or Temu or something. Not using a starter. This one surprised me. I'm like, a starter? What are we doing, making sourdough? But apparently, yeah, a starter is kind of important. So that is finished compost or pre-bought mix. So not using that. You can do it without using that. But what's going to happen is it's going to take longer for that process to start. So this can really speed things up. So once you've been doing this a little while, you know, save a little bit from the previous batch to throw into your new batch that you're making, or you can buy a premix, or, you know, we'll get into the next section, vermicomposting. Mm-hmm. Worms. Gross. I had to like not look at pictures for that part.
May I'm back. I'm sorry.
Oh,
about
you're back.
That.
No, go right ahead. Jump right in.
Go up a little.
Go up a little at once.
It says don't add meat or dairy. Is that what it wrote?
Yeah, adding meat or dairy.
So I got this guy I listened to on YouTube. His name's David the Good. Mm-hmm. What something he suggested, and it's a specific plant you plant or seed that you plant with it. He said take like your, if you don't want to make bone broth with your turkey carcass, just put it in the freezer. Freeze it. Then take it out of the freezer in the spring, dig a deep hole, and put some like brown material on top of the turkey carcass. So dig it pretty deep. Okay. I tried this, and I had some beautiful sunflowers grow up, and I also had squash. He said put a pumpkin patch over it or squash. Really interesting. He said his wife took like, you have old crap in the back of the fridge and throw it in there too. But he said you could take like carcass and throw in there, you know, but he didn't say dairy. So I agree with the dairy. Although we should, I'm going to look into it. Cause I know that in hog farms, they feed milk, usually hogs. They grow hogs on dairy farms.
Okay.
Cause they feed the raw milk to the hogs. So that's interesting. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your flow.
Oh no. Jump in anytime. You know, we do this whack-a-mole style. It's all good.
Yeah. Cool.
So then you can do cold composting, which basically is just like the long-term version of everything we just went over. So this is a very passive, slow, set it and forget it method that can take anywhere from 6 to 12 months and breaks down materials naturally over time with less labor. So this is the kind of thing, once you've been doing this for a little while, you kind of get everything set and piled up probably towards about the end of autumn, and then let it kind of go all through autumn and winter. And then once spring rolls around and really kicks off, you know, it's going to start to be ready to use. So obviously I'm not going to be able to use that for my garden this spring, but I can start a pile to be ready for next spring. But
I have these buckets I bought, worm buckets. So it's two buckets, one fits inside the other, and there's a screen in between. Yep. I've never done that inside though. I'd be afraid to have the worms inside the house. But I watched this lady, she has them in her basement.
Okay. One of the links I put below, I actually deleted one of my links accidentally. So hopefully it wasn't that one. But it was this really neat article. Now it was some Chinese lady talking about her tiny little Chinese apartment, you know, over in wherever, Ho Chi Minh City, I don't remember. But, you know, she was talking about setting it up for her very small apartment. She was worried about the smell and stuff like that. But she's like, as long as you take the right steps, it's not a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is interesting. And I know, you can find a lot of videos on YouTube. You can find a lot of articles just all over the interwebs about this. Apparently became quite popular. So vermicompost is nutrient-rich organic fertilizer and soil conditioner produced by earthworms digesting organic waste and creating a living soil amendment packed with microbes. Sustainable, odor-free process breaks down food scraps and paper into nutrient-dense castings i.e. worm poop.
Mm-hmm.
Gross.
It's not, actually. It looks like coffee grounds. It's interesting.
But this can really enhance plant growth and soil fertility. Yes. Now, this one does involve more equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to need a worm bin, plastic tote, or I edited that poorly. Basically, it's like testing. You need like stacked totes or bins, okay?
Mm-hmm,
You need air holes, drain holes. The reason you need the second bin is to catch the worm pee, and I never knew worms peed.
Yes, they do.
I will never be the same.
And they breathe through their skin.
Oh, God.
So they're interesting.
Gross. apparently red wiggler worms are the most commonly used for this. And you want about a I forgot to edit that. I have better information down further. But you need your worms, you need shredded newspaper or cardboard, bedding, and a handful of soil.
Mm-hmm.
So the step by step. This one takes a lot more thinking through.
Yes.
You need to measure your food waste and space. So you need 1 square foot of space per half a kilogram of food waste per week.
Mm-hmm.
There's math involved here. I was not happy. Bins should be relatively shallow, about 1 to 1.5 feet deep for the bin with the worms.
Right.
And you're going to set up a dark colored bin indoors under a sink or in a shaded spot outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep it between 59 and 77 Fahrenheit. I forgot to add the Celsius there. My apologies. You're also going to need a second bin for excess liquid. So another 6 to 9 inches. You need to, if it doesn't come, like if you don't buy one set up specifically for worm composting, you're going to need to drill holes in the bottom of the top bin about mm-hmm. 1/8 to 1/4 inch to allow drainage, and 1/4 inch holes around the top perimeter and on the lid for ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
You need to prepare the bedding that is light and fluffy. So black and white newspaper, no colored inks, no glossy anything. Cardboard, coconut fiber, leaves, or peat moss.
Mm-hmm.
You need about 0.18 kilograms per gallon. So 3 pounds per square foot. You're going to wet the bedding to sponge moist, again, so that sponge moist, using a 2-to-1 ratio of water to bedding, then add a handful or two of soil, which provides grit for the worms and soil bacterias. And then you chuck the wormies on top. Okay, mm-hmm. No, don't chuck them. They might scare the worms. I don't know. Do worms get scared? Maybe.
They were, the ones we bought were in a burlap sack.
Okay.
And when I took them out, they were all clumped together. They were like really huddling for fear. It took them a minute to spread out. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I'm not like super girly girl, but I know. No, I just know. I can't do the creepy crawlies and the Wrigley's. Gross. So then you add a handful of twist. Okay, went over that. So you add the worms on top. Red wrigglers are the most common type. You'll need about a 2-to-1 worm to waste ratio based on weight.
Yeah.
So,
This is confusing math here.
it's my own stupid abbreviations. Weekly food waste kilograms.
Okay.
So that's where you measure it out and say you do 10 kilograms of food waste a week.
Okay.
And then you're going to multiply that by 7.
Mm-hmm.
For 7. And then, divide it by 7. Then that gives you your daily food waste kilograms, which you then multiply by 2, and that mm-hmm. equals the kilograms needed. So, yeah. That
I don't know if you have it here, but the thing you posted pre-show talked about a luggage weighter, a luggage scale.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in your outline here.
It's not in the outline. It might be in the links. If not, I can try and drop that in there.
A luggage scale, yeah.
Luggage scale. I mean, I imagine you could even do like a digital kitchen scale.
Yes, yeah.
You just want to make sure that it's as accurate as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So you place the worms and material they come in on top of the bedding. Wait about a week. You want the wormies to adjust. You know, they've been ripped out of their home. They've been shoved in a burlap sack and shipped God knows where in the world. It's a little bit traumatic. So they need some time to kind of unwind.
Yes.
Then bury a small amount of chopped scraps under 2 inches of bedding. You want to feed only what they eat. So fruits, veggie scraps. Oh, here's where it was no citrus. Okay.
Yep. No citrus.
No citrus. Yeah. Way too acidic for the poor little wormies.
That's right.
So you can do carbs and grains, washed eggshell. Washed was kind of stressed in the article I was reading. So, you know, I would definitely err on the side of safety and just wash that. Coffee grounds, tea leaves, add scraps on top of fresh bedding and about 2 inches more bedding on top of that. You can place a moistened sheet of newspaper on top to maintain moisture levels. And then you want to wait at least a week before harvesting. Because I guess the worms, they work their way up through, you know, they munch, 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 and then poop, poop, poop. And
poop, 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 yeah. Do you know what I did when I was feeding them?
What?
I had an old Ninja blender that I wasn't using because I had bought a new one. I was blending all my stuff I was going to feed them in the blender.
Okay.
Just like, you know, less surface area, easier for them to, you know, and I always added like, because I'm picky about avocados. Like, mm-hmm. If they've got a tiny bit of brown, I ain't going to eat that shit. It has to be all green for me. So any of the parts I would cut out, they like avocados too. But okay. I would just blend it all up. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
This is good. Yeah.
So yeah, that was definitely interesting. Definitely check out the articles on that one, guys, because like I said, I was trying to filter down a slightly more complicated process into bullet points, and I don't know if I did a very good job, but one question I had, Tess, was could you take the worm castings and use that as a starter for your hot compost pile?
That's a great question. I don't know how that would work. I would have to go back to my Dr. Elaine Ingham class. She mentions worms, but, and definitely when it's cold composting, that if you don't want to be bothered with the thermometer, you just leave the pile where it is and hope for worms. That's the exact quote of her. She goes, just leave the pile there and hope for worms. But that's, I mean,
okay.
That's a great question. I don't know.
I wasn't sure if it would have the same types of microbes and stuff in the worm castings that are needed as for a starter. So I ran out of time and wasn't able to look into that and add it. So if anybody in either of the chats knows, let us know.
I mean,
Filthy says, yes, you can do that.
There you go. Yes, ask Filthy about making maybe you could use a tea, worm compost tea, to be a starter.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I read about that where you can make a tea out of it and, mm-hmm. and water plants with it. I'm not sure about it as a starter. So, Filthy, when you hear this, let us know. All right. And then we come to method 3 for the composting, trench composting. So this is kind of, I think, what we were talking about a little bit earlier, where you're setting your beds basically.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, you could do it just as a compost trench, but it makes more sense to do it when you're going to plant something directly on it. This is called the lazy garden bed method.
Yeah.
I am all for that. I'm not a lazy person. I'm a busy person. So, like,
yeah.
I like this.
Yeah.
So you want to dig a 12-inch trench in an empty garden bed. So you want to go about a foot down.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to just bury chopped kitchen scraps covered with microbe-rich soil. Rotate your locations. It's ready in 4 to 8 weeks for kitchen scraps to break down. I didn't go too deeply into this one because it's gonna be more or less the same steps and processes that we just covered.
Mm-hmm.
But you just kind of set it in there, let it do its thing, and then in a couple of weeks, it's going to be ready to have plants planted directly on top of it. So I like this method. This is efficient.
Definitely.
I like efficiency.
Definitely.
So if anyone has any questions about anything we just covered, now is the time to ask, because we're getting ready to switch over to topic 2, which is garden pests, slugs to bugs to furry fiends.
I don't know if you mentioned, like, say you're starting a new garden bed, right? Say you've got acres and acres and you want to, so I learned that you if you want to, if you have vegetation that's already growing there, like a cover crop, not a cover crop, but grass, mm-hmm. right? So this is what we did in our backyard. This is how I learned about it. You take cardboard, you rip all the tape off it, and I would put the cardboard down in the fall and the winter. And by the time we built our beds, because we were able to, but, you know, not all people can buy, like, you know, material, like we use right. cinder blocks. But when you, it's easy, when you take the cardboard off, you hold it down all winter, and then you take the cardboard off, all your cover, all your lawn will be dead. So okay. that's when you would, it, you know, if you were digging a trench, or what we did was we left the cardboard there and we bought some soil. We bought some 50-50 soil and we threw it in there and we used, you know, cinder blocks. So just use like, it's just easy. Take an old Amazon box and just to, you know, if you're building a new bed somewhere where it's not. And the cardboard feeds the worms also.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine. This is, stop saying sorry.
Whack-a-mole.
One of these days I'm going to find the time to do the AI where it's like all of our little skellies popping up and. All righty. So we did have a question from Arian Eagle. He asked if the blood of thine enemies can affect the soil.
Absolutely. Why do you think cemeteries make such beautiful flowers and trees?
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
It depends, though. Are they lizard Jews or are they?
Yeah, I think that would have an effect. I think it would.
Oh, wait. I'm not supposed to say that word.
What? Lizard?
Lizard.
Lizard people.
The lizard people.
All right, so now we're going to go over how to deter common garden pests. So starting with slugs and snails, the most common newbie killer. This is an issue we have had the past couple seasons trying to grow anything. Is just like the slugs are like zombies, like nom, 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 nom. It's like, oh, my God. And again, they're gross, so I don't want to touch them. Ew.
Yeah.
Which kind of screws me over on the very first method recommended for, you know, getting rid of them is hand-picking them. Take a flashlight at night and just pick them. Like, no.
Put them in soapy water.
Yep. Just chuck them in soapy water. It's
oh,
free.
There it is. I see it. Yeah, you got it.
And it's like, you know, as much as I hate them, I also don't want to kill them. I feel bad.
The birds will eat them.
Okay, so I need to attract more birds to my garden. There we go.
Yes.
I can do that. Basically, you go out at night with a flashlight and gloves. Even there, I'm like, I need one of those, like, grabber thingies. Drop them into a bucket with dish soap water. Now, this other one, Filthy also recommended this, last week? Beer traps.
Yes.
Bury a shallow container level with the soil, fill it with cheap beer, and just empty daily. And I'm like, I so need to do this if for no other reason than to see drunk slugs.
Nice.
Oh, Kermie said, Jews make terrible compost, ovens only.
Ovens only. Yeah, I get it.
Only because we don't have a handy volcano, I'm just saying.
Well, there you go.
So yeah, beer traps is probably a good bet, especially because like you don't have to even spend a fortune on beer. You get the shittiest possible beer, all right? And you can just get one of them big, those single cans, mm-hmm. right? Just, just, you know, strain them out daily. And then you have, of course, different barriers and products that you can buy or build. You can sprinkle food-grade diatomaceous earth around the bases, but on dry days only. I guess you don't want that soaking down into the soil. Something called copper tape around the beds or pots, or you can use an iron phosphate bait called Sluggo. Honestly, I say just go for the beer. It's cheaper and probably more amusing.
Yes.
Apparently garter snakes will also eat slugs. So if you see garter snakes, don't get rid of the garter snakes. Let them kind of have free run and you'll be all right. So. Yeah. Equipment needed, flashlight, beer, diatomaceous earth, potentially copper tape, Sluggo, and shallow containers. And again, you can use an old butter tub, you know, Tupperware or whatever, and just sink it in. Excuse me. All right.
Get one of those headlights.
Oh, yeah, one of them little, yeah. Okay, if y'all do this, though, if you go out at night and actually pick them, instead of just a light, get a GoPro, film it, and send me the video because I got to see this shit.
Definitely.
Bonus points for anybody who does that. So insect pests. So you've got everything from aphids, caterpillars, flea beetles, squash bugs, Japanese beetles, etc. So a couple different methods. So there's the physical methods, a strong hose or spray for aphids. You can hand pick and chuck in soapy water or row covers to prevent squash bugs and caterpillars. Mm-hmm. You can make a do-it-yourself spray. So garlic, onion, or pepper water, or some combination thereof. You just chop them up, steep them in water for 24 to 48 hours, strain, and just psh, psh, psh. And again, like that's something, if you cook regularly with garlic, onion, and pepper, you could probably even use the scraps.
Mm-hmm.
Smacking my laptop around to make the spray. So again, it's all about functionality and getting the most out of your products that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
It all kind of works together in its own little ecosystem. You can get neem oil, but you know, any kind of oils tend to be expensive. Plus soap mix. So about 1 to 2 tablespoons of neem plus 1 tablespoon of dish soap per gallon of water. And biological. We just talked about it, attract predators.
Mm-hmm.
So plant dill for ladybugs. You can use diatomaceous earth on soil and leaves. Cut worm collars around transplants. So again, you know, depending on what route you're going, you can get like a bunch of fancy stuff, or you can get a cheap spray bottle at the Dollar Tree.
Mm-hmm.
And just make the garlic, onion, pepper mix. That's something I want to try. Again, just because...
Yeah, you use a lot of. I'm sure you use a lot of garlic in your family.
we have the Trinity, as I call it, that I get the big containers of, which is oregano, ground garlic powder, and onion salt.
Nice, perfect.
You can't live without it.
No.
Slightly smaller in container is my crushed red pepper flakes because you have to have that on pizza.
No salt though. You don't have salt.
Oh, yeah, I have my salt and pepper grinders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's just standard. Yeah, yeah, I get it. Non-kosher salt, yeah?
Yeah.
We got to have that pink Himalayan salt, too. We like that pink
I've never used the pink Himalayan salt. Mostly because I'm just cheap.
It's not cheap. No.
Guys over in FTJ are saying lizards will eat bugs in your gardens. We don't really have lizards in my area, but that is a good point. You know, maybe, and I know Tess, you've recommended this before talking about plants, is just go on like your local municipality's websites and they'll often have information about like local flora and fauna.
Yeah.
And just kind of do your basic, like, okay, I have aphids. What are a natural predator for aphids? And see what you can do and how you can draw them into your little biosphere.
And this is why it's important not to use insecticides at all, because the insecticides will not only harm the ones you're trying to get rid of, but it will harm the good ones too. So, I don't know if you have it here. There's also something called a trap crop.
Okay.
For example, I don't remember trap crops being on your outline.
No.
I'm thinking about. So like, for example, we have squash bugs, and we also have, squash vine borers here. So the pest, let's just say where I am, the pest load is tremendous here.
Okay.
And I really try to promote the good pests, right? So, but still, you know, it's taken a couple years. Like, you got to plant a variety of, you know, things for pollinators and things the predators like, right? So, meanwhile, you plant a trap crop. So, I know, like, I like zucchini. Like, they go after the zucchini.
Okay.
So, you plant something you don't like that they'll go after. Like, I don't like...
You plant a sacrificial plant.
Right! Like a Blue Hubbard squash.
Great.
Plant the Blue Hubbard squash because I don't really eat that.
Right.
I like my zucchini.
Right.
That's a trap crop. Yeah.
That's freaking awesome. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna have to try that. I wonder what is attracted to Brussels sprouts, because I hate Brussels sprouts.
I got companion planting books, but they're all packed away. That's
okay.
another you know, look up. I don't know if you have that, like companion. I don't know if we've gotten to that yet, but companion.
No, we haven't yet. No.
The book I have is awesome. It'll tell you, like, each chapter will be like, okay, what do you want your companion plant for? Do you want to attract pollinators? Do you want to deter pests? Do you want, you know, things like that? So if you wanted to, so like, you know, I think you plant marigolds for tomatoes. You know, you don't want leaf cutter bugs to go or cutworms to go after your tomatoes, things like that.
Okay. Yeah, maybe, you know what, that might be a really good topic for next month. Companion planning. That's going to be the time where everybody's really getting into the garden and transplanting seedling. At least here, like I got out to go to work this morning and I had to brush 4 inches of snow off of my car.
Oh no.
It's snowing again as I'm streaming. I'm like, no. So if you're in a northerly climb and you know you're spring is delayed a little bit, you know, we'll just be kicking off planting stuff by next month.
Yeah. That's why you need a, when you get your greenhouse or something.
There is one planned and going in hopefully this year.
Nice.
But we kind of have it set, like, cause we built a deck last year in the backyard and there's going to be, Aaron Eagle's building me a little, we call it the Hexen Hut, the little witch's hut, because it's going to look like one of the little fairy tale witch's huts in the woods where it's got the super peaked roof.
Nice.
And it's going to be my little, I don't have a she shed, I have a Hexen Hut.
Nice.
And then behind that, we're going to have that, you know, you'll go up through the deck, it's attached to the deck, and you know, you go in the front door of it off the deck, and then it's going to go right through, have a door in the back that opens to a half-sunken greenhouse.
Nice.
It's going to be fantastic.
Nice.
Love that man. He builds awesome things for me.
Well, you give him good things too. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that's coming. But yeah, I like the idea of doing companion plantings for next month. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to... And things have kind of eased off a little bit at work for me, so I'm trying to do better about planning ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, alrighty. So, furry fiends.
There's your companion planning.
Where?
I'm sorry, number 3.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, go ahead. I'm
I forgot my own outline.
No, you're good.
All right, so the furry fiends. This can be any kind of critter. So rabbits, deer, squirrels, groundhogs. Like, we've had bears in our backyard at least twice.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
I mean, they were more scared than we were because it was a juvenile. It was 4th of July and the fireworks freaked them out.
Yeah. I don't know what I would do with a bear. I might run away screaming.
What's the saying? If it's black, fight back. If it's brown, lay down.
Yeah.
If it's white, good night.
Good night.
Good night. I mean, if it's a panda, you don't got to worry. They're just lazy, clumsy little fucks. Although koalas are almost like the sloth version of a bear. They're just like, I'm going to eat my eucalyptus very slowly.
When my daughter was still in school, she thought she wanted to be a veterinarian. She was looking at job descriptions to go to China and... Or go to Australia. Oh, no. It was go to China and be a panda hugger.
Okay.
Hug pandas. Because they want to be hugged.
Yep. They're very codependent bears.
Codependent bears. Yeah.
But, yeah. So, depending on your location, again, go on your local websites and find about your local fauna to see what kind of critters you got running around. So... Mostly what we have here is we don't even have a lot of squirrels. We got some chipmunks. They're not usually too destructive on plants from what I've heard.
Acorns?
Well, yeah, acorns are going to be on, but I think squirrels are more generally destructive. Rabbits.
Yes.
Yes. Groundhogs. Be careful. Groundhogs are fuckers.
Oh, yeah.
Be careful. They're mean.
I believe it. Yeah.
So there's lots of different methods, you know, starting with physical barriers, obviously. Like, that's going to be one for us just because we have a lot of deer that come right through the back of our mm-hmm. property, right where the garden's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anything from chicken wire fencing, you want to bury it at least 6 inches deep if you got rabbits, though, because they will burrow. Everyone forgets that about rabbits, but they burrow.
Yes.
4 to 6 foot deer netting. strung up on some 2x4s, or 4x4s, I should say. Row covers or cloches on young plants. Obviously, you know, bigger animals are going to be able to knock them off, though, so, you know, take that into account. You got repellents, so do it yourself hot pepper garlic spray. So, you, again, just blend peppers, garlic, and soap water and spray weekly. Probably something we will be doing. Motion-activated sprinklers or ultrasonic repellers. I know we've also tried in the past where you got that stuff that's supposed to smell like predators.
Oh, okay.
Sprinkle. Because we had put in the grotto we put in, and I planted, it was a variegated European dogwood bush. It was supposed to be really pretty, and it didn't survive. Right. I think it wasn't getting enough sun. And the deer were eating it.
Little buggers.
Fuck you, Bambi. I love that plant. but then I had the two holly bushes on the side. They left the holly bushes alone, thankfully, but my variegated dogwood bush did not make it. So, yeah, we had tried that stuff there, and it held them off for a little while, but enough damage had already been done that it just didn't make it. So, you know, different, you know, sort of, I don't even know what you call them, but like predator scents you can get are going to have different levels of effectiveness. Then you've got your companion planting plus the habitat. So marigolds, lavender, oregano around the perimeter. Add bird feeders to draw predators away.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the equipment there, you know, fencing, netting, spray bottles, motion devices. It can be as cheap or as fancy pants as you want it to be. I err on the side of cheap.
Err on the side of cheap, yep.
So that was kind of it for the notes, I think. So let me stop sharing and we'll bring this up. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you guys got any other questions while we have the glorious Miss Teresa on with us?
Oh, boy, am I so big.
See if we have any questions in the chat. I know Kermie, Filthy was dropping some really good. Worm poop looks like dirt because it is. Excess liquids equal compost tea. Don't throw it out. Oh, okay. I think he means the excess liquid from the worm composting.
The bin. Yeah.
So you can use that too. Yeah. Two worms will procreate exponentially once they're in your compost bins.
Nice.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you guys think? You guys got any other questions while we have?
And let's see. Some birds lead snails. Skimming the chats here. Lizards, wild boars. I don't know how. Wild boars? Wild boars were created last time we fed Jews to the hogs. Don't do it. No, we just have to harness the wild boars and ride them into battle, all right?
Yeah. It'd
be awesome, because they're all scared of pork anyway, so it'll be like doubly effective.
Yeah. Why do the Jews and the Muslims don't do pork?
I'm not entirely sure. It has something to do with the cloven hoof.
The cloven hoof, yeah.
I mean, at least from what they say. Uh-huh. It is interesting because the boar was one of the most sacred animals to the ancient European cultures, too.
Yeah. So.
Like, there's reasons for that. Mm-hmm. Praying mantises eat every bug.
They
I know,
do.
But they're so scary looking. They look like aliens.
They're really cool, actually.
Oh, okay, Filthy says you can deter moles and other burrowing animals with castor plants. Good to know.
Castor plant? What is a castor plant?
I guess castor beans that you get castor oil from.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay. Deer fuck up everything in Louisiana, apparently. I feel like deer fuck up everything everywhere. Oh, my God.
So I'm down here in... You know, I'm down here in North Carolina, and we have like 3.5 seasons.
Okay.
That's what I call it. And for certain vegetables, that's 3.5 weather. Like we have half a winter, you know,
right.
We get ice. We don't get feet of snow typically. But meanwhile, we have two growing seasons for certain, like the cold snap, like Brussels sprouts. Or, you know, broccoli, lettuce, you know, they can survive whatever freeze we have. But anyway, The reason why I bring up all this is because I've discovered I can grow lemongrass here. I really like the lemongrass, and lemongrass is supposed to be good to deter certain pests like mosquitoes. And I have a friend who has a farm. She has a farm out in eastern towards the ocean. But anyway, she said now she's talking to me about citronella.
Okay.
I'm like, I want the citronella because the mosquitoes here are just horrendous. She goes, no. You're going to, because they like to hunt their deer here.
Okay.
And we have acreage where there's deer there. If we ever want to hunt them, if we have another holodomor here or whatever, she said, don't plant the citronella because it's poisonous to the deer.
Okay.
The lemongrass, it's not poisonous to them. And you can attract them, but meanwhile, you'll get rid of your mosquitoes there. I said, okay. That's just interesting. I don't know. Because we're talking about food security here. I know you're right. I know you're vegetarian, but,
Yeah, I got to look up how hard it is to grow, like, lentils or some shit. I mean, realistically, if right now my focus is just helping to supplement people's food sources and give them more agency back so they're not relying on the Goyslop and the Franken foods.
Right.
But, with kind of an eye towards, just in case shit does hit the fan in a major way, realistically, if it got that bad, sorry, Bambi, your dinner.
Yeah, you have to be.
It's being a vegetarian is a luxury that I have been afforded. I can do without luxuries if need be, if it comes down to survival.
Yeah.
So, I know I have a really weird view on it that surprises people. They don't like, you're a vegetarian. Yes. No, I'm not going to preach at you. That always trips people out. Like, you didn't preach. You didn't call me a murderer. I'm like, no.
Sometimes it just has to do with preference.
That's a lot of it. I feel better not eating meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I got bit by a Lone Star tick as a kid. Who knows? Did you hear about those?
I have.
With the, I think they got off, what was it, Plum Island? Or Jekyll Island, or one of those where you get bit by them and all of a sudden your body cannot metabolize red meat.
Yeah. They create all kinds of things.
Oh, God, yeah.
Franken creators. Yeah. I get it.
They mess with the natural order of everything. That is the whole thing with Jews. They mess with the natural order. Mm-hmm. That was one of the ways I started really learning about the Jew influence was when the Eaglet was about 3-4, we started really hearing more and learning more about like Monsanto and DuPont and all those and all the GMO foods. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold the fuck up. What? That's where, one of the threads that started leading me to this. And I'm just like, son of a bitch. So, yeah. I mean,
and those microplastics too. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Yeah.
Microplastics are bad.
Yeah.
That's really bad. I mean, it's just I have my black pill moments where I'm like, is any of this even worth it? But I just don't have it in me to not at least go down fighting,
Yeah.
So we have our Hail Victory Gardens.
Right.
And it's a good thing.
Right.
Learning these things is also, it has another component. It helps us reconnect to our heritage and our cultural past. And we're white people. We're Aryans. We're meant to learn and to do, not just sit there like zombies in front of Netflix and nom, nom, nom down the Swiss rolls or the ding dongs or whatever, Goyslop choice of the week is. We feel better when we are doing things. That's one of the reasons they have hit us so hard in the knowledge compartment and taken so much of this from us. You don't learn this shit anymore. it's all part of keeping us trapped in pursuing shekel wealth so we don't have the wealth of knowledge and the wealth of experience. And sorry, I'm kind of like on a soapbox. I'll get off.
You're good.
But it's important. I know it might seem silly for newcomers to be like, oh, I'm going to go on my white power and my national socialist sites. And there's a gardening episode. Damn right. There's a gardening episode.
Well, and the dirt, like the soil is part of, from dust we came and to dust we will become. Mm-hmm. And it's grounding. When you have your hands in the soil.
Oh yeah.
And when you go barefoot in the soil, that's the other thing. You're grounding and the energy flow.
Yes.
From Mother Earth. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and scientifically they've even proven this. Free radicals. It pulls the free radicals right out of you. I cannot wait till I can take my shoes off and walk in my backyard barefoot. It's killing me. But yeah, it's we got to get reconnected with nature, you know. So that's my little spiel on it.
I'm with you.
So speaking of soapbox, Lord of the Rings 4, Wild Hog Throwdown. Okay, I might actually watch that one, Kermie. Good God. Yeah, you're right. Go ahead.
Is he talking about the battle, The Hobbit?
Lord of the Rings. I think he's being silly. Like, they should do a fourth one, Wild Hog Throwdown.
Thorin's cousin came riding up to the walls of Erador on the boar. That was one of my favorite moments.
that was pretty cool. Books were better, awesome. But yeah, Arian Eagle over on 88, definitely. He pointed out blood and soil. Mm-hmm. It's what it's all for.
Yeah. They're trying to make us into something we're not. We are stewards of this planet.
Yes.
And this realm granted by the creator. And they want to turn us into destroyers because that's what they are. But we're not. Yeah. We're
no. I mean, we've gotten pretty good at fighting back different times historically. Just another set of skills we need to brush up. Pull back out of the closet and get better at. So let's see. We got a Eagle Pax Max jumped in, was hanging out with us. Arian Eagle says Hitler promoted agriculture and stewardship of our land. Yeah, there was something to do with a lot of their switchover in the laws had to do with I forget. I try to study and remember this stuff and it's like trying to just cram all this stuff into a tiny little space in my brain. The way farms were being broken up, like really old family estates, they just kind of kept getting parceled. And they wanted to stop that because what was happening was it was kind of being basically vulture capitalism today, where they'd come in, they'd break up this big old family farm that had been around for forever. And then they'd buy up the scraps and all of a sudden the Jews own it all. And became a big problem. We've seen that to some extent in a different form here in America, just modernly, you know, where they've made it so expensive for farmers to just grow food that, you know, more and more family farms have to be sold off after generations.
Yep.
And, you know, Monsanto, DuPont, Chinese companies, now they're coming in, they're buying up the farmland, they're doing the big factory farming.
85% of Eastern North Carolina used to be all farm, like livestock farms. I know there's a lot of hog farmers out there, but now close to 85% have been sold to Chinese corps. My state, it's sick.
Yeah.
And who am I to tell you want to sell your family farm? It's your business. I'm not going to tell you you got a farm and this, that, and the other, you know, so it's sick. It's sick. You know, in China, I recently watched a documentary. In China, the farmers, I guess they're like a collectivist farm. So the farmers cannot sell the land, the farm. They might be generation. Yeah, they can't sell it. They have the state has to sell it. But I guess they're leasing the land. So they're farmers. They're generational farmers. They're not allowed to. But meanwhile, they can come to our country and buy our farmland.
Uh-huh.
What the heck?
Yeah. Yeah, it's disturbing in so many ways. I don't understand. It's like, I feel like the farmers should be protected because they grow the freaking food.
No, they do, but they've been sucked into this loop of being a commodity. They get their funding from the corporation, the government.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of them do if they want to, you know, participate
and
sell the commodities. So,
yeah,
if you're
there's some of your handiwork.
It's really hard. Huh? What do you got there?
Hat. Oh. Steve will put them up. Put that up in the chat. That's your tomatoes.
Yeah. Look at my cucumbers.
Gorgeous.
It's been a couple years, girl. I've been busy, man.
Oh, believe me, I get it. Like, tomato is the one thing I don't want to grow just because, like, I know that'll be the one thing that grows like crazy, and I almost never use tomatoes.
You have to have a whole show just on tomatoes.
Yeah.
What you have to do to have, that year I was on it. What else is there? Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for
peppers. Looks like green peppers on top.
Oh, those are the banana peppers. Oh, and the green bell peppers. Oh, is there my eggplant in the back there? I see eggplants. Yeah, I grew eggplants that year too.
Remember one year, God, the eaglet was like five. We did have some successful garden beds, and we grew like regular eggplants, but there were also these little round ones that were like white and purple stripes.
Yeah.
Those were really good.
Those ones in the back there, those were the Japanese eggplants. So they're long. They're not.
Okay. They're the longer, thinner ones.
They did well here.
Okay.
We have such a pest burden. Pest.
Right.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Thanks, honey.
I had to show that off on screen. So
it's been a few years.
So next month, next month, do we want to go into companion planting or do we want to do all things tomatoes? Because I bet you we can rope Shlomo in for that one. He would be really excited to come on for that one.
Take a vote.
Okay, guys, in the chats. Next month, what do you guys want to go over? Do we want to go kind of deep dive companion planting or do we want to do all things tomatoes with guest Professor Shlomo? See, if I had music queued up, I could play the Jeopardy countdown music. Da, 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 da.
I need my pencil.
All right.
I need a pencil.
Okay, we got our first vote. Arian Eagle says all things tomatoes. If we do that, though, I want more pictures if you have any. Did you do any videos on your YouTube about tomatoes? It's been a while since I checked your page out. I'll have to look.
I think I did I made some elderberry jelly.
Kermy wants companion planting, but with Shlomo. Of course, like I'm promising to bring Shlomo on, but he's a very busy white man. So, you know, it's all based on his schedule.
Yeah.
Bear Waffen says tomatoes. Eagle Paxmax says tomatoes. Thomas E. Dwyer says tomatoes.
So we got four tomatoes, one companion.
One companion.
I'm taking the vote here.
Uncle Steve says I'm partial to tomatoes. So we'll take that as a vote for tomatoes. Tomatoes are winning, guys.
Yeah.
That one will be fun because I can find pictures to put up on the screen. Here's a plum tomato. Here's a Roma tomato. Here's a beefsteak tomato.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of tomato confusion. You know, one tomato is not like another. They have different purposes.
Some are determinate, indeterminate.
Yep.
You know, yeah. And you could go into a whole thing about pruning them.
Okay.
To make them stay alive longer. Yeah, it's so fascinating.
Yeah. I think the tomatoes have won.
Okay.
Kind of slowed down. Everybody seemed, oh, hey. I just saw Bear Waffen jump in. Hi, Bear Waffen. If I didn't say hi to you, I'm sorry. So, all right. I think the tomatoes have won. So that will be our go-to for next month. I will touch base with Shlomo and have him help me put together the outline as well with that one. Again, I'm just not real familiar with them other than like, ooh, I get the little tiny ones to chop up on my salad because I can't go through the big ones.
Yeah.
I get one plum tomato that lasts me like five salads.
Yeah.
So, all right. Looks like tomatoes it is, guys. All righty. We're going to actually get ready to jump off here, probably just a couple minutes early, because Dave Gahari is going live next with Thomas Sewell. Everybody needs to go check that out. That is going to be a very based freaking show. I'd like to actually catch part of that myself. So I'm pulling rank and I'm going to cut a little early.
You should. Good.
So, Tessa, once again, thank you so much for coming on with us. let us say bye-bye to our chat over here. In 88, we had Arian Eagle, Bear Waff, and Eagle Packs, Max Kermy, mm-hmm. and Sergeant Snackles, who either fell asleep or skipped class. So he's playing hooky. Bad Snackles. And then in our 88, in our FTJ crew, we had Shameless Wise Ass, Arian Eagle, Filthy, Kermy, Thomas E. Dwyer, and Unobtrusive. I know, was in. Uncle Steve was in. I think I got everybody. Oh, thanks, Thomas. He said we did a good job. Woot. I enjoy these. Hey, Tessa, so I started doing the all women's panel the first Tuesday of every month, White Power Women's Hour, with Monica Schaefer, Kathleen Dudley, Fashbird. Would you ever be interested in coming in on that one? Or sure. Is Monday harder for you? All right. I don't know what the topic for next month is going to be, but I'll float that out to you and send you the invite link for that one as well. It's just we just pick a topic and we just have a conversation around it, kind of like whack-a-mole.
I think I listened. It was last week, right?
Week before?
Yeah, I was listening.
Last week, yeah.
Yeah, I had not heard of Kathleen, so went and listened to some of her stuff on her YouTube. Yeah,
she's very highly educated.
Yes.
So... awesome, we have another bass lady. Yes. This was part of my goal, was to let's get the ladies going, the ladies involved. So it excites me because I'm a nerd.
Definitely important.
Well, you understand, balance. We need balance.
Oh yeah.
So that applies to everything, including male, female. So
oh yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'm trying to think of a song to play for everybody. On the way out. Let's see what my Amazon suggests.
And it's great to talk about gardening. Here we go.
Woo! Gardening is my therapy. Nice. Mm-hmm. So, all right, you guys. Like I said, check out Dave Gahari with Tom. I think it's Thomas Sewell. I hope I'm not getting his name wrong. Sometimes I mix names up. But definitely check that out. And, of course, there's always a ton of amazing people streaming on FTJ, on 88. There's also people that go out on Rumble and other sites that don't come onto our sites but are still worth a watch or a listen. Check out crewbot.net, especially if you need the low bandwidth. Fantastic for listening to bass content on the go. And, yeah, have a white fucking power evening.
White fucking power.
Oh, I got to hit the button. Forgetting to hit the button. There we go. Duh. I'm a dummy.
Could it be your way to torn to set of thrown again? All that pulled you right apart, shuffled loss in your way. Time to draw a new card. Rise up, rise up, out of the fire and forge yourself once more. Rise up, rise up, out of the fire and forge yourself once more. Looks good on you. May I walk beside you? I can see a dragon high, pumping flames through your veins. Shed your skin and we'll restart. Rise up, out of the fire and forge yourself once more. So rise up, out of the fire and forge yourself once more. royal divinity that you tapped into. Holding your wings high and taking your first flight. Rise up, rise up. Count out the fire and find yourself once more. Rise up, rise up, rise up. Count out the fire and find yourself once more. Yourself once more.